So this one tactic alone got me $100,000 from selling this one YouTube channel that I even have to make the videos myself or show my face on camera.
Bro, this is slept on.
All right, so we're back for another episode. How you doing, man?
Another week. Good. How are you?
I'm doing good, man. So there's some news going on in the YouTube space.
Okay.
Apparently they came out with, or they're about to come out with the A-B testing for thumbnails. For those who are not nerds like us, A-B testing has been something that I think Mr. Beast and everybody has like wanted and asked YouTube to provide us for like years. So what A-B testing is, you know, obviously people know what a thumbnail is. And if you're watching this and you don't know what a thumbnail is, you're watching the wrong show probably at the wrong time.
Of course, yeah.
But what A-B testing is, you know, obviously people would have one thumbnail and they try to get that thumbnail to perform. They want people to click on the video and hopefully the thumbnail performs.
Right.
But sometimes it's hard because you have two different thumbnails and you're like, well, would this perform better than this one? Mm-hmm. But you're kind of iffy about it and you're getting mixed feedback from all your friends about it. Mm-hmm. And so you have to just pick one and hope that it works, right? And then maybe a few days later you change it if it's not performing, right? Well, now YouTube's about to come out with the feature where now you can have both thumbnails and it will send it to different people. So then you get the full data and you can actually see for sure which thumbnail performed the best and then do a full transition to that thumbnail.
For sure, yeah. And there's been a ton of programs similar to this that's not actually integrated into YouTube Studio that do a pretty good job, but in my, I'm trying not to get too excited for this because YouTube's also been teasing this, saying they're going to drop it for the past like 3 years now. But I can't wait. I think that's so cool as well. Have you seen like the little snippets on Twitter of the screenshots? So it's taking the basis of data off of watch time. So it'll be like thumbnail A, 47% watch time, thumbnail B, 57%. So I thought that was pretty interesting as well. And then I also saw a tweet. It was either from the retention director from Mr. Beast or the Todd guy who works on the YouTube algorithm, who was saying it's actually a mix of both. So it's your watch time compared to your, I don't know if it's like your channel average CTR or how it really works, but it's like it's integrating based off impressions and based off your watch time, right? So if your title, a good example I saw was like Mr. B staying 100 days in a circle, right? And they tested broad one where it's a top point of view and Jimmy's just laying in the circle, right? You can barely tell it's Jimmy. And then they tested a version where it's like Jimmy laying in the circle, reaching out at the camera. Right. And although that the one reaching out at the camera was a little more interesting, it didn't fit as well with the video. So YouTube was showing that the more standard just top-down view was more similar because it was similar to the video, therefore his watch time will be higher.
So you're saying almost like it's not even just click-through rate percent, but it's also like, okay, is this thumbnail actually getting you less people watching as long as they normally would?
Because we all know, I mean, YouTube's favoring platform duration, right? That's their whole goal. They want to keep you on the platform as long as possible. So if they can kind of like use this to their benefit in a sense, like for example, if we give you thumbnail A-B testing, you're therefore gradually just going to have longer platform time from your viewership, therefore longer platform time for YouTube, which is just like a win-win situation.
Right, and also like sometimes people over-promise in their thumbnail and title.
Of course.
And that affects, it's almost like clickbait. Like this is the bad side of clickbait. People, like the real reason why is people hate on us saying you should clickbait is because they misunderstand what we mean by you should clickbait.
Right.
We mean clickbait to a point where it's not disappointing the viewer. So there's a balance where you got to clickbait, making sure the thumbnail and title stands out where it's very exaggerated to make people be like, oh my gosh, but not so far exaggerated that people click and they get disappointed watching your video, right? And so that's a good thing that they're coming out with that feature. So then people can know, did I overpromise and underdeliver? And that would help a lot for
people. Yeah, my biggest thing that I'm excited to see from this, just like you said, is like, where does clickbait go from here, right? Because if people are just looking at the A-B testing, clickbait will probably be less recommended than other concepts because it doesn't correlate with your video, right? So YouTube is going to be pushing this other thumbnail. So it's interesting to me. Like, is clickbait just going to fall off? Is it going to become better? You know, like, what's the angle or like, what way are we coming off of this?
Imagine, like, YouTube, like, removes thumbnails for everyone and that's, like, the real update.
That would be fire. Did you see a new Ryan Trahan thumbnail? It's literally just a selfie of him, so maybe it'll work.
I feel like when you get to a certain status, a celebrity, like a Mr. Beast,
stop
like,
caring.
You can stop caring and you'd probably still get views.
That would be me. That's, like, the Casey Neistat thumbnail. So they're literally just vlog selfies.
And it works.
Yeah.
Because they click for his face.
Exactly. And I'm sure that probably helps with watch time as well, because that's literally what the video is, him walking around vlogging in New York, so.
Oh my gosh. All right, cool. So let's go into this video, guys. I mean, I know that a lot of you guys are listening on audio, whoever, wherever you are. We're going to have some visuals. So I always recommend with these type of shows because we're all a little bit more visual oriented with YouTube. It's a very visual platform. So I recommend if there's ever a moment, guys, where you're like, oh, I want to see that picture or I want to see that video that we are talking about.
Yeah.
It's usually on the screen on the YouTube platform. If you are an audio listener, please leave us a 5-star review. It really means a lot on Apple Podcasts. But let's get into this, guys. I mean, we got to talk about most of our viewers already know what YouTube audio automation is. If you don't, go to our other, you know, episodes where we break down what YouTube automation is. But there's something that I feel like a lot of people are sleeping on and they don't fully understand. You know, they don't realize that you can sell these YouTube automation channels for six, and some of them sometimes seven figures when you get it really big. Yeah. So it can sell for a lot of money. Or the other way, if you're an investor, you have lots of capital and you want to buy an already established channel, that you can do that as well. And this is going to be a video that I haven't seen anyone ever do ever in the space of YouTube automation, is break down how you can either sell or buy a channel. Because we've had a client before that got scammed, where they sold their, they tried to sell their channel, but they didn't have the right formula in place and they got scammed or ripped off. So we want to make this video to try to help as many of you guys as possible to avoid getting scammed and some of the pros and cons with selling along the way or buying a channel. So
of course, yeah, I think this episode as well is almost just like a step behind the curtain of YouTube automation. Because I'm not gonna lie, like this is the first time, or like I think a month ago about, is when I, like, you were telling me about like selling YouTube automation channels, acquiring new YouTube automation channels, and it was something that I had never even heard of. And obviously, you know, I've been in the YouTube space for a while now, so I think this will be a eye opener for a lot of our viewers who are already kind of like established in the YouTube community.
The first step is, how do you even find a channel to buy or sell? Yeah. Now, there's multiple places you guys can go. There's a bunch of them out there, but we'll give some of our top ones. There's a place called epicmpc.com. EpicMPC has been around forever.
Yep.
And it's literally a forum. You can either buy or sell a channel through there. So I recommend you guys utilize that platform, or there's a bunch of other platforms. Like, I think it's accounts or something. Like, what was it called? It was other websites. It's accounts, like ACCS and then market.com. So accounts market. Yep. The other one is FameSwap. So FameSwap also has it. And then there's PlayerUp. So there's a bunch of sites. If you literally just search on Google accounts for sale YouTube, you'll find a bunch of them, and you can list or buy YouTube accounts for yourself.
I think what's great about a lot of these as well is, from a personal standpoint, obviously I'm not super experienced with buying and selling YouTube channels, right? What this website I think does very, very well is kind of build that, what's the word I'm looking for here? Not like notoriety, but like trust, right? So if you go on individuals' accounts who are actually selling YouTube channels on here, you can see their trust factor, how many accounts they've sold, what's their rating, etc., which kind of hopefully minimizes that kind of like scamish
It's
encounter.
Like a reputation. Exactly. Yeah, exactly. Like, one thing I don't recommend is going on Facebook groups to buy. That's how our client got scammed, is they went on a Facebook group and they met some random person who has a channel and whatever, and or wanted to buy their channel and stuff. So I don't really recommend Facebook groups. You might get lucky, but there's a lot more risk there. So I recommend using more websites that's very big out there. Now, the next question is, how do you know what your channel is worth or what a channel is worth?
Exactly.
So the biggest mistake I see clients making when buying channels is the channel has no potential to making more money than it already is. And we can pretty much walk together on how it works and what we've noticed when it comes down to figuring out if a channel has potential or if you should or shouldn't buy it.
For sure, yeah. I think some of the biggest things with channels is, obviously the biggest one by far that I've seen is what you're saying, right? It's people buying these channels that don't have potential to grow anymore. And then it's like, what's the goal here? Is it like you're playing the long game and you're just trying to make your money back eventually, right? But I think the biggest angle, or the smartest angle that I've seen people take on acquiring channels, is you find a channel that has that potential. They already have that viewership of 50, 100K views per video, maybe a few million per month, XYZ, and you actually see the potential to improve their content, right? Let's say the channel at first is making $5,000 a month, right? You acquire this channel. Is there a possibility that I can get this channel to $10,000 a month? Should be the question you're asking yourself internally, right? And to me, that shows the almost like, so what I'm looking for again, like the opportunity is worth it, right? Because you never want to just buy a channel, eventually, hopefully pay it off after 2 years if the revenue stays the same. And I think that's a big thing that we spoke about a lot as well, is like, I've been sending you some of these channels over and you're like, those are great, but how can we make these channels better?
Right.
And that's the angle that you kind of have to take.
And one thing is, when you look at a YouTube channel, you guys need to remember that if you buy that channel, you're removing the creative brain from the channel. And so you have to make sure and ensure that whatever the video quality standard is, whatever was already set of a certain narrator's voice, a certain whatever editing style, you have to know that you're going to have to replace that or do better.
Replicate it.
And so if you can't do better than what was previously already out there content-wise, it's not going to work, yeah. You know, because think about it from the viewer's perspective. They subscribe to a channel for the last year and they love the content. They have certain standards of that channel. That's why they love it. And then all of a sudden you buy the channel, you release the first video of you acquiring the channel, and it's like 50% of the quality of what it used to be. The viewer's going to be like, what is this? They're going to notice a significant difference and they'll no longer tune into the channel.
So question, this is a little off topic, but we've seen, like, for example, one of the biggest faceless channels is the Jake Tran channel, right? He doesn't show his face, but you kind of have that voice tied to the brand. Like, if I hear Jake Tran's voice, I know it's a Jake Tran, mm-hmm. Tran video, right? Recently, I've seen it all over articles and on Twitter, everything, that he's trying to sell the channel. Mm. Where do you think that kind of goes from there?
I think you have to, if it's associated to someone's name like a Jake Tran, you have to do a royalty deal based on his voice. So he becomes a voice. It would be very hard for him to walk away completely. He's put himself in that box. What would make more sense is he becomes a narrator and he steps down from everything else. So for example, they say, hey, here's the deal. For 2 years, you'll have to be a voice talent for the channel because it's reliant on your mm-hmm. name. You'll get 10% of the revenue from the YouTube channel. And, you know, whatever we send you, you got to do it kind of thing, right? And that becomes the deal, right? And most people will be okay with that if the price is right.
So you think as soon as he swaps voice, he loses some of that loyal audience that just understands
yes,
him.
Yes, I think whoever purchases his channel, mainly because it's reliant on his name, mm-hmm. whoever purchases his channel, the viewers want to watch Jake Tran.
Right.
And the moment that guy disappears and it's Jake Tran, but like a different guy's voice, it's
Jack
like, wait,
Tran.
Yeah, like Jack Tran, like what is happening? It doesn't work.
Yeah.
And so what's going to end up happening is he put himself in this weird box. And so he's going to have to fill in the shoes of the narrator probably long term. But, you know, he'll still make some good money recurring for doing
and
obviously upfront a huge amount.
I do think a benefit that the Jake Tran channel has, although it's not the personality, if he is trying to exit the channel eventually, I think what they do have is that long term stability of the niche, right? It's kind of that documentary basis on government, which will be around forever. Everybody knows it always has and always will be, right? But I think a big issue that a lot of the people that I see, at least acquiring channels or trying to sell channels, are the people that are going for these trend-based channels that don't have that longevity. What's kind of your angle on that?
I think it's tough because there's it just depends on the niche, so it's really hard to say. Because you could claim that one thing is a trend, like let's say we're talking about like an Elon Musk.
Right.
Well, Elon Musk has a lot of correlation to the tech world. Mm-hmm. So, you know, let's say Elon Musk dies out one day. What's to say that the tech world dies out? It probably won't. So I think that you can be reliant too much on the trend, but at the same time, you can easily sometimes pivot into something that relates to that trend and still be fine. Because the way I look at it is this, the viewers that made that trend a trend, mm-hmm. they go somewhere. So you need to chase after the viewers, not necessarily the trend. If for example, Elon Musk fans, they love Elon Musk. Who are they? They're usually the Bitcoin crypto people. They're usually the Web3 fanatics of tech and Tesla. Mm-hmm. Cool. Find where those people go. If Elon Musk becomes irrelevant, they'll go somewhere.
What else do they watch?
Exactly. What else will they watch? And you just pivot into that. So I think there's always a way. It's a little bit harder than, it's not like a flip of a switch and you figure it out, but there's always a way to do that and navigate that. And that's why like most channels that do go on sale, and most reasons why people do sell a channel, is because the trend started to die out. And if the trend started to die out, you just have to think in your head, okay, can I match the quality or do better? And can I figure out who this audience is and really deep dive the audience and the demographics and where that viewership and audience went to? And can I cover that topic of content?
Yeah, for sure. That definitely makes sense. I think a little like bonus kind of like requirement almost here from what you were saying is like what's the trend of view? Like, for example, if they're pulling 10 million views a month, what were they pulling the 6 months beforehand? Mm. Is this their highest month within the last 6 months? XYZ, whatever. But just like understanding the channel as well is a big thing, not only the audience.
Yeah. Let's figure out the equation value, right? Yeah. Like what is the valuation of a channel? So here's a broad idea of a valuation of a channel. Now, there's multiple ways to value. Everyone has their own opinions of what value, but this is what I've usually seen people sell channels for without having too much pushback from the other person and vice versa.
Okay.
So what I've seen it be is when you look at your last 3 months of earnings, because that's what really matters, right? If your channel, guys, is dying out, you're going to probably get less money for it because it's dying out.
Obviously.
If your channel is increasing in revenue, you'll get a lot of money. That's why my personal opinion is the best time to sell your channel is
at
in the peak. at the peak, but no one wants to do it because when things are good, they're like, I don't need to sell it. People only think about selling when it's bad, right? Yep. So if you want to be a smart guy, you sell it at its peak. But anyways, my point is you look at your last 3 months of revenue and then you want to times the average of that last 3 months per month of revenue and times it by eight. For example, let's say the last 3 months average monthly revenue was about $10,000 a month. That means 10,000 times eight, the roughly it'll be about $80,000 is what it'll be worth if you sell it right now, right? So that's kind of a gauge of what you guys can go for when it comes down to what is a channel worth.
Wow, that's crazy. It's super profitable. It's way more profitable than I thought of when you initially were like telling me about this. Like my assumption was like maybe 3 to 5x like typical revenue, but this is wild, right? And that's why I feel like this is such just like an unfathomable thing to a lot of our viewers, is because like when you're timesing your revenue by eight, right? Even $5,000 a month, you can sell that channel for upwards of 40 grand, right? Which is a lot of capital for most people.
And people don't realize how, I wouldn't say it's easy, but how possible it is to get you a channel to $5,000 a month. And remember, this could be brand deals as well. If you have relationships with brand deals, it's not even ad revenue. It doesn't even have to be ad revenue. If you have great relationships with brands and you build those relationships with a brand deal and the brand deal is paying you a lot of money, you just transition that relationship over to the seller or to the buyer.
Right. So side question, longevity wise, let's say if there's a channel up for about 6 months, they're pulling at the third month, $5,000 a month for 3 months consistently, right? Technically off this equation, that channel would be worth upwards of $40,000 a month. But is there, and this may just be like, what are you talking about? But is there any kind of those circumstances where it's like, hey, this channel hasn't been up long enough, right? Like they came up right during a trend. And of course the channel's doing well because the trend's doing well, right?
Well, that's why we do last 3 months. Because, you know, if you do the typical way people do it when they sell a company, YouTube isn't like a formal traditional company. Yeah. And that's why I think the gauge has to be different on how you sell it versus a traditional company. For people who don't know, traditional companies, they sell based on, they call it like EBITDA, which is almost like a profit.
Right.
And what it is they look at pretty much your profit over the last, you know, like a per year basis, but they look at last 2 years. And then they times whatever that yearly average is times, I think it's like, it depends on the industry, but like 3 to 5x usually.
Okay.
The reason why you can't necessarily always do that with a YouTube channel is because A, supply and demand. Most investors are not existent yet. The market of YouTube automation is still fairly new. And so you're not going to find investors or that typical person that's going to be willing to invest into it with that big amount of money compared to other business ventures, right? And it's not as stable sometimes compared to a traditional business, like a real estate business. So that's why you can't necessarily sell it in the old fashioned way of a traditional business. And that's why what I say is, look, because of that, because it's so the variables are so different, right? When it comes down to YouTube, the industry is so different. Because of that, that's why I just say last 3 months. And it's the best gauge to go based off of.
Yeah, I think that's very valid as well. Because it's like, if that channel is going to perform for 3 months consistently, that has potential to perform for 3 months more, right? So yeah, I think that definitely makes sense. Now that you know the things that you should be looking for when trying to buy a channel, let's talk about the most important thing, money.
All right, so we got to talk about contract then. Contracts are so important. The reason why most people get scammed because they don't have a contract.
Of course.
You need legal contracts. I know people get scared when you hear the word attorneys, but I'm telling you, when you get bigger and bigger in business, attorneys become normal. You have to have attorneys.
I still get scared when I hear the word contract. So
do you actually get scared when you hear the word contract?
It's a little I'm a baller. Not even worried about it at all. But I think it is though. Like when you hear that, it's just like you hear like legality, right? Which just means you need to get a lawyer to write your contract XYZ. Yeah. So I think we can kind of break down a lot of these nuances and the things that you do need 100% in your contract, because nowadays, screw a lawyer, let's use ChatGPT, am I right?
Yeah, well, there's we got to break that down. Personally, yes, you can use ChatGPT, but in my opinion, if you're selling or you're buying a channel, truth is you can probably afford a lawyer.
Yeah.
A basic level attorney will probably cost you to write a contract for yourself. It'll be about $600, maybe $800 for a basic level attorney. And so in my opinion, $600, $800 to write your own contract on how to purchase and sell a channel is not a big deal.
Not bad.
It's not a big deal at all. So I think it's worth the investment because it also protects you, and you can also get feedback from an attorney. ChatGPT can definitely help you, but you know, with AI programs, you never know if there's some information that the AI might leave out by accident, right? And so if you have an attorney, they might be able to look at all the pros and cons and how to navigate a legal agreement. The goal of a legal agreement is to make sure there's no loopholes. Exactly. There's no missing pieces that would allow the seller or buyer to scam you or whatever, right? And so that's why you need an agreement, an attorney to look through it and help you with that process. So we're going to go through some of the basic stuff that we recommend you have in your contract. Ultimately, still talk to an attorney. There's a lot of stuff that goes into the contract, but I decided to copy and paste some of ours so you can get the broad idea of it to help you guys out. So first off, let's talk about purchase price, okay? And we'll have the editor probably try to show a little screenshot of it. So purchase price, clearly you got to mention how much are you buying the channel or selling the channel for, right? So you want to mention, let's say $20,000 if you're purchasing the channel for that much, right? And you guys can just copy and paste the text that's on the screen for that site. Then the next one is closing. There's going to be a lot of text and we'll try to condense of the editor and everything, but we're going to have to like go through it pretty fast. The main point of the closing clause that we have on here is mainly just mentioning this is important, the ID code of the channel. Yes. So most people, let's say I'm buying a channel called Super Awesome Teslas. Okay. Like, let's say that's the YouTube channel name.
Yep.
Where a lot of rookies go wrong is they will add in the contract, I'm purchasing the channel Super Awesome Tesla Rookies or something like that. What ends up happening is, what happens if the channel owner that you're trying to buy it from changes the name?
Yep.
Well, then legally you don't have anything, right? Because they can do anything they want to play around that loophole. That's exactly a loophole. You got to seal that loophole. How do you seal the loophole? So what you do is within YouTube, they have a URL, right? So they have like an ID system. It's usually /UC and then a bunch of digits after the UC. You want to copy that ID of that YouTube channel and you want to put it into the contract. So then no matter what they do, whether they change the name, the /URL, they can't change that ID. And that becomes the legal binding contract and the ID code for that YouTube channel.
Smart.
The next one is, and I can't even say the word, severability. Again, attorneys get paid to use big words. I'm not going to lie. That's literally what they get paid for.
Literally.
So pretty much what this is pretty much, I'll just read a clause here. If a court finds any provision of this agreement invalid or unenforceable, the remainder of this agreement will be interpreted to its best to carry out the party's intent. So then this is really important. Within this clause, you got to mention the jurisdiction. So a jurisdiction is very important because here what ends up happening if you don't mention a jurisdiction in an agreement. It ends up being a situation where whoever sues who first gets to dictate where the jurisdiction becomes. And no one likes that on both sides.
No.
So what ends up happening is, like, let's say I want to sue Jimmy over here, right? I try to sue Jimmy all the way in, I don't know, California, and I'm in, let's say, Texas. Well, if I get to him first and I sue him, then I can say you have to come to Texas. But if he sues me, then I have to go to California. Well, some states, and at least America, obviously every country is different, but in at least America, states are different when it comes down to laws.
Oh, yeah.
And so the whole game can be different based on that. So it's like, if you want it in your own jurisdiction, you like the legal agreement of the jurisdiction you're in and the legal laws, you have to make sure to make it easier on you as well for travel costs.
Yeah.
You have to make sure it's in your local jurisdiction. Otherwise, it's a pain. So what you'll do is in here, this is where you kind of put the provision. You say, hey, let's say you're in Missouri, like the state of Missouri. You say, hey, look, anything that goes down, any legal situation that goes down, we're going to have the jurisdiction be in the state of Missouri. And then sometimes you mention like the county or something right after. So this is the part of the agreement that's very important you want to have in there.
Yeah, this is unheard of. I've never even heard of this.
Because most people don't know how to hire attorneys. I mean, every creator I talk to, they are so stupid when it comes down to attorneys. Why? Because attorneys scare them. The reality is attorneys are not that scary unless you don't have money, right? And so if you have someone that has experience like me with attorneys and you actually have some money, then you can get a lot of great advice and you know how to navigate the legal system. And most people don't know how to navigate the legal system, which means you end up being in a better position in a business deal.
Of course.
I mean, look, it's serious, but like, let's be honest, guys. The worst thing to happen to all of you guys is you guys get scammed.
Yeah.
Like, that's the worst thing. Imagine you work so hard on a YouTube channel or work so hard to get money to buy a YouTube channel and you end up getting scammed. You lose it all. You don't get anything for it. This is why it is so important to have agreements. And look, it's worth paying an attorney $800 one time to get an amazing written agreement.
Although you have all these safety nets in place with contracts and with the accountants and lawyers and whatever, I think it's still definitely safe to use an escrow, which for people who don't know, an escrow is almost just like a middleman in a sense, is how I like to think of it from a very broad standpoint. So this website right here, escrow.com, which obviously will pop up a little quick video on the screen, but it basically will just save your protection in a sense. So let's say I'm buying an account for $10,000, right? So what I would do is I would pay this middleman service, escrow.com, $5,000. That person then will receive that $5,000. There's kind of a few angles that you could take on it with every escrow account. You can send half, they receive half. Then once they send the channel, you get the channel, you confirm it, then the other $5,000 is sent. Or you send the whole $10,000, they hold it until the other person will verify that the product has been received.
Yep.
These are always just great for safety nets in case, even with contracts, you're still a little nervous.
You always need a middleman. Always need a middleman. Anytime you do a YouTube channel, you need a middleman. Why? And we'll get a little bit more into this later, but on YouTube, when you transfer ownership to someone else, it takes 7 days. So they have access to your YouTube channel for 7 days. That's not great. What does that mean? After the 7 days, they can change potentially their role to like primary owner or something, which means they can kick you off. You end up in a very bad situation at that point, and they can just run off with your channel. So I really recommend you guys make sure that you have a middleman in place, because they'll be able to hold the funds, so then both parties can't take it back or get the money until the both parties agree, yes, it was delivered, the funds are there, right? So very important you guys learn escrow.com. We can't give a whole tutorial of escrow.com because there's a lot to it, but look, do your own research, learn about that website. It's very important to use that website. It's a very prominent website.
I think a big thing on this as well is if you ever mention that you want to use an escrow and the other person is very against it, that kind of gives you a key
it's
indicator
a red flag.
That is a scam,
yeah,
right?
It's so a very red flag, yeah.
Even if you're not ending up going to be using this escrow.com or whatever it is, I think you at least kind of recommend this, engage that person's reaction based off that if you're a little iffy on if it could be a scam or not.
Yeah. All right, so now we're going to talk about how to actually add, like we said, there's 7 days of a transfer process, how to transfer ownership over to someone else.
Yeah.
And hopefully we'll show a little bit of an on-screen edit. Editors got to work hard on this episode. Editor's going to be grinding on this one. So pretty much when it comes down to doing so, you have to navigate over to your dashboard, which is, you know, pretty much at studio.youtube.com. You then go to the settings, and then you go over to permissions, and then on manage permissions, that's where you're able to add different users to the account of the YouTube channel. You add their email to it. I recommend if you can, some accounts don't have this, but others do. I recommend if you can, put them as a viewer first. So if you put them as a viewer, they will only be able to see the channel. They won't be able to do anything like mess with the analytics, mess with the uploads, whatever. It's very smart to add them as a viewer for 7 days. Then after the 7 days, by the way, during this process, you want to move the money to escrow. I forgot to mention that. Move the money to the escrow account during this process and then wait 7 days, okay? And then after 7 days, you can go ahead and put the person as primary owner and release the escrow or vice versa. That's the way I would conduct it to protect yourself because it is a 7 day process. The way one of our clients got scammed is they went ahead and added the person to the account and everything, and they put them as an owner. The problem with putting them as an owner is immediately they can change themselves to a primary owner after those 7 days, which means they can quickly kick that person off and you're out of
have
money.
Full access.
And also apparently the middleman they were working with secretly was in on the scam, right? So this is why it's very important to use a prominent website like escrow.com, etc. Right? So just remember the transition process or transfer process is very important, and you got to really know how to play that game as well. If you guys have questions, there's a lot that goes into this. If you have questions, A, you can comment down below and we'll try to get back to you and feature you in the upcoming episode. Or what I really recommend you guys do, we do have a course and everything that does help you out. It's very cheap compared to all the other courses out there and very high quality. Yep. Like I've literally, imagine this production quality we have, but like on steroids in an actual course, which you never see that. And it's less than $100.
And covers nuances.
It covers the nuances and everything. And even better, the biggest thing, we have a Discord community part of that course. So if you want access, hopefully we can remember to leave the link down below.
For sure.
If you guys don't see the link down below, just comment and yell at Julian.
Yeah,
it's Julian's fault. It's blame him, all right? But we'll go ahead and leave that down there. It's a lot of helpful resources to help you guys out. I know there's a lot here, and it's hard to break it all down in one episode, but there you go.
So for our Q&A segment this week, if you guys don't know, every week we do a Q&A at the end of the video where we take one of your guys' comments from the past week and answer it on the podcast, obviously. So for this week's question, we have FitZip asking a question. Shout out FitZip. How many days after a video is posted until it's time to decide to change the thumbnail if impressions are high and views are low? This is a good question. And coincides with our very first question, which is this A/B thumbnail testing, which hopefully will help this guy out in the long run. But other than that, this is pretty nuanced because I think it definitely changes channel to channel and niche to niche, right? My kind of base levels with this is just looking at an average, right? So it's a little difficult if you're a newer channel, but what I like to do is, first of all, first 3 hours to me, I try not to look at. I try to almost like disassociate in a sense. Like, you know how you hear like stocks people talk about, like, I try not to let my emotion drive off red and green for the day.
Mm-hmm.
I do the same thing with YouTube analytics, because if I get a 10 out of 10, my day's brutal, right? So the first 3 hours, I try not to look, because that's your returning audience who already comes back to your videos no matter what. So that data is a little skewed, right? But typically after that 3 hour mark is when you'll kind of start to gain those unique viewers. So what I like to do is around that 3 to 5 hour mark is when I'll use as a checkup, right? And sometimes it still is good to check within those first three to see how your impressions are based off an average, right? But at around that 4 to 5 hour mark is when I'll go through and I'll look at, so for example, the CTR, right? Because obviously that's what weighs into the thumbnail title, right? So I'll take a look at the CTR and I'll compare it to an average. So at this 5 hour point, what's the CTR, right? Let's say it's 10%. Let's say at the typical 5 hour mark, my CTR is a 8%, right? To me, that means this thumbnail and title is strong. Why would I change it? It's higher than average. It should overperform typically just based off CTR, right? But if it's the opposite then, and my typical CTR is, let's say, 10%. And at this point, 5 hours in, it's a 7%. To me, that's a good signal that I should be changing this thumbnail and title because it's not resonating as it typically does, right? And if you're not hitting your averages, then that video is not going to perform better than your average, right? So I think it's kind of just a game of testing, plug and playing analytics, looking at your averages. What I like to do, and this is a slept on thing, but it was funny. I think we were talking about this a couple months ago where you can actually go on your YouTube channel and top right, I forget where it is, so I'll pop up a screenshot, but you can export your data to a Google Sheet, right? So it'll take each video title on the left side of the column and it will put the analytics with it. So it'll be like, let's say the video is I dribbled 100 times in one day. And then it'll say the CTR and the average view duration of that. You can then scrape your data of what's my average CTR after, say, a week, right? Because these videos have already been live for so long. You then compare that average CTR to all of these CTRs, or if any are below that, change it. Change your thumbnail and title from the back catalog. Right. I can't explain the amount of times that I've swapped a thumbnail, and I'll pop some wild graphs up here on the screen, but I can't describe the amount of times I've switched just a thumbnail or switched just a title and the video is just skyrocketing.
And one thing I do recommend, guys, so the game of YouTube is testing, and people don't realize that. Like they think that you just upload a video and you should have it figured out. No, the entire game is testing everything. That's marketing, that's social media content. One thing that's really important, I call it like the rule of like 24 for YouTube, the rule of 24 hours. You need to make one change every 24 hours. Too many people, they change the title and they change the thumbnail the same time. Well, if the video performs, that's great. But was it the thumbnail? Was it the title? Was it both? You don't know. And so the best move is to do one change at a time, right? So if you feel like, okay, the CTR isn't the greatest, let me adjust the thumbnail first and see if that works. Change it first, wait 24 hours, see if the performance got better. If it got better, perfect. You figured out maybe it's the thumbnail. If you want to get it even better and test even more, maybe change the title a little bit. Yep. And if it goes lower, well, you know the title messed up and go
for
back.
Sure.
You constantly do it that way.
Yeah, I think a good gauge as well, like kind of like what you were saying is like, if you're going to change one at a time, I think everybody from a very broad standpoint, if you know absolutely nothing about YouTube, you can look at a pair of thumbnail and title and say which one's lacking more. Is it the title lacking more? Or is it the thumbnail lacking more? That's what you change, right? And I think the biggest issue that I've seen with thumbnail testing or A/B thumbnail testing is the... I completely blanked out.
Is when your brain dies.
Literally, yes, when your brain dies. But the biggest issue that I've seen with thumbnail A/B testing on YouTube is people aren't changing the thumbnail or title drastically enough. Like, people will A/B test and be like, this sucks. Why would I ever do this? I didn't see any difference. And they'll change their title from like 1v1ing viewers to 1v1ing my audience. Like, there's no difference here. Why do you expect the data to change with a very similar swap? So like, I was talking with one of the guys who used to work on Mr. Beast's channel. I'm trying to remember his name, can't remember, whatever, but—
Wow, you're irrelevant, whoever you are.
Yeah, don't remember your name, so I don't really care. But
dang, Julian.
We were talking about a Preston video, and we'll pop the video up on screen. It's testing or busting 100 Minecraft myths in 24 hours.
Okay.
The thumbnail right now is I think it's still the exact same. It's him underwater with a TNT block that's burning out, right? Pretty crazy thumbnail. Everything underwater performed super well for him. TNT, everything performed super well for him. So we're like, why isn't this performing? The CTR was a little low. I talked to him and his biggest thing was like, bro, one, this doesn't feel real. How can you get a TNT block underwater? You can't get fire underwater in real life. You can't get TNT underwater in Minecraft anyways. But the biggest thing is when we started to swap it, we saw a decrease in CTR, but the thumbnail and title still felt strong. And we were like, why? Like, why isn't this doing well? And all we were doing was changing the thumbnail from underwater to overwater, right? And he's like, yes, you're changing that bottleneck of why the CTR wasn't performing well in the first place because it doesn't feel real, but to me, if the CTR is still decreasing, that's not the only reason, right? So why aren't you taking a whole new approach at this? Because this didn't work in any aspect, why are you trying to refix something that's already broken rather than ideate something brand new? And that's like the biggest thing that I've seen make a difference in my A/B title swaps is like, and thumbnail swaps is like, how can I literally take this video and repackage it in a completely different angle.
Well, that's a lot of information. I think that a lot of people find that benefit. And maybe we need to do a dedicated episode, it sounds like. Just we almost need to open our laptop and just show people the process. I think that's the biggest thing. Just data.
Yeah.
But also, guys, if you guys have any questions yourself, comment down below to be featured in the next episode and everything, and we'll help you guys out. And I think that's it. See you guys in the next one.
Bye.